In 2016, the US Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, made the slightly controversial decision to approve a drug after it had failed multiple clinical trials. The reason for the decision was that the FDA had come under pressure from a patient group for the disease the drug was testing, Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Duchenne is a rare genetic disease which causes severe muscular wasting, normally in boys. For DMD sufferers, the average life expectancy is 27 years, and there is currently no cure, just treatments which can help alleviate symptoms. Summit Therapeutics is a British biotechnology company which is attempting to develop a cure for DMD. And today I've been joined by the group's chief executive, Glenn Edwards. Glenn, thank you very much for coming in.
You're welcome.
So the approval of the drug back in September 2016 came as a bit of a surprise. Why do you think the FDA was so keen to get a DMD drug approved?
I'm not sure the FDA is keen or otherwise in getting a drug approved. I think they're relatively... They go by the data, they'll see what comes in front of them. The pressure was really coming from the patient groups and obviously politicians who are influenced by the voters. I'd just like to go back and correct you. It's not that this drug, Exendos 51, from a company called Sarepta, had failed multiple trials. In this particular case, the issue was, had they got enough data to show that the drug worked or not? Had they passed the hurdle? It's not they'd failed it, but had they got adequate data? But your question is absolutely right, because it's highlighting that in some of these really rare diseases or diseases where there's no current treatment, there's incredible pressure to try and get new treatments, because that gives patients hope. And if they work, obviously are going to transform the lives of these kids. So I think this is a really good example of immense pressure from the patient groups and the difficulties the regulator has in balancing up the objective hurdles of whether to approve a drug or not when they've got this immense pressure coming at them.
Yeah. So that sort of desperate need for a DMD drug, is that one of the reasons that you got into the area?
Well, yes, actually our work originated from a world famous team at the University of Oxford led by Professor Kay Davis, who had the idea that this terrible disease, for which up to now there's been no real significant treatments, could be solved by, instead of fixing the genetic fault, by recruiting another system that the human body has, which could help this disease, and that is to make a related protein called utrophin. And so her life's work has been dedicated to finding out if we could get a significant treatment for this disease by recruiting another protein that the body produces. And so Summit has produced a range of utrophin modulators, the most advanced of which is in a phase 2 study at the moment. And if this works in animals and in humans in exactly the same way, then we have the opportunity to really transform the lives of these kids and restore their muscle function to something approximating to normal.
Such an amazing sort of space to be working in. So utrophin modulation differs from Exondys, and it also differs from another drug which has recently been approved. Why is it that your drug could be better?
Well, I think the other two treatments, the Exondys 51 and the other drug you're referring to, Translarna from PTC Therapeutics, work in a different way. But if they work, they only work on a small subset of patients. So one of the really exciting things about utrophin modulation, the approach that we're taking, is that a single drug could apply to the entire Duchenne population. And so for most of the boys with Duchenne, we are the most advanced treatment in development that could fundamentally affect the nature of the disease. So we don't really see those other two as competition. We see them just as other people in the field. And potentially there's the possibility that the drugs could be complementary to one another, that treatment with their drug could be enhanced by treatment with our drug, or vice versa.
Okay, that's interesting. So you've said you've done trials in animals. So for anyone who invests in biotech, they will know that that's the first stage. From then, where are you now?
Right. So we are in the middle phase of the three phases of testing of drugs in humans, of clinical trials. We've completed phase one studies, which are primarily about safety, although in our particular case, one of the challenges of our drug Izutramid was getting high enough levels of exposure. And so our phase one studies were not just aimed at looking at safety. They were aimed at optimizing the exposure levels of the drug. And having got good exposure levels and a good safety profile, we're now in the phase two stage, which is probably the biggest stage for investors. It's the biggest value change. It's where you get the first evidence that your drug is actually working in man. This is a very slow developing disease, and so the trials are fairly long. So in our phase two study, these boys get treated for approximately a year. Okay. We should be getting the first indications of whether these drugs were working or not later this year. So it's a really exciting time for us in this treatment. After many years, we're at the sharp end, and we'll find out whether the really exciting scientific data is borne out in human trials.
Mm. So how long has it actually been since sort of the first idea from your scientists in Oxford?
Well, the first idea from predates the company formation, so that was more like 15 years ago. Yeah. But the company was set up in 2004, and here we are in 2017, just about to get the first human efficacy data.
Yeah. So in what year was Summit founded?
Summit was founded in 2003.
For the investors, then, it has actually been quite a long road even to this point. Would you say investors have had to be quite patient in waiting that long before this drug makes it to market?
Well, I think all of us as human beings are impatient, and the investors can be so. But the people who I really feel for here are the patients and the parents of the patients, because this is a disease where it progresses. Children lose the ability to walk when they're 10 or 11. And all these boys who get the disease will die in late 20s or early 30s. And so it really behoves us to work as fast as we can to try and find out whether these treatments work, and if they do work, to get them to market, because every month is a month lost for these children.
Yeah. And with regards to that, your drug, has it been given orphan drug status?
Yes. So actually, I think one of the huge successes of drug policy over the last 20 years or so has been all the various measures that have been taken to encourage companies to develop treatments for these really rare diseases. And one of those is so-called orphan drug status, which is available in all the developed world. And we've got that. This is something that gives both financial benefits and also regulatory benefits. And the pathway for getting approval for these drugs for rare diseases, especially where there's no current treatment, has been eased as much as possible. But the biggest driver that has encouraged innovation in this sector has been the high price that it's been possible to get for orphan diseases. And I know that then raises a wider issue of drug pricing policy. And some of the orphan drugs have really come into the spotlight in that area. But if we take a step back, the ability to charge a high price for these rare diseases has been a major factor in the large number of effective treatments that have got there. We have another program, which is an antibiotic, and the opposite has happened there. We all know that there's an increasing number of bacterial infections for which the current treatments don't work. And the pipeline of new antibiotics is actually very lean. And the reason it's very lean is that the pricing for antibiotics has been very low, and it's been too low to encourage pharmaceutical companies and investors to invest in those programs. And I think long term we're going to see that maybe the orphan drug pricing will soften a little bit. Still, we need these new drugs, so that we're still going to see relatively high pricing for orphan drugs, but maybe not as high as we've had just recently. But what's really got to change is antibiotic pricing. We've got to find a way of encouraging innovative companies and academics to develop the new range of antibiotics that we so desperately need. Mm-hmm. Our antibiotic has really got to a very good stage, but it would not have got there if it had just been down to the capital markets. Our investors were reluctant to put money into that when we had this very exciting Duchenne program. Mm-hmm. Fortunately for us, the Wellcome Trust stepped in and have given very significant funding in order to get it to the end of phase two, where it's now commercially viable. But we really do need to see changes in pricing from antibiotics to go up, or other incentives, in the same way that perhaps in other areas drug pricing maybe has got a little too high.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You're sort of on both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, and actually from an investor point of view, that's really very helpful, because it means we've got two complementary programs. We've got a relatively high-risk program in the Duchenne. There's no certainty that it'll work, although the data so far is really very encouraging. But for these types of drugs, there's a risk that when you get to man, it doesn't work out as well. On the other hand, if it does work, then we're going to make a fantastic return for shareholders. So that's a higher risk but a higher reward project. And then in the antibiotic, although there are nearly a million cases a year of C. diff infection in Europe and the US, that's an awful lot of patients, with current antibiotic pricing and a reasonable market penetration, that's likely to be in the sort of $700-800 million a year of sales. That's still attractive for us, but the really good thing about it is that once an antibiotic has got to the stage we're at, the end of phase two, then it has a relatively high chance of getting to market. So in these two programs, we've got a baseline case with the antibiotic of a good chance of getting to market at a fair price and a fair return to shareholders. And then we've got the high risk, high reward on top of it with the Duchenne program. And I think in terms of place for employees to work and for investors to invest, it's a really nice setup.
Nice mix. So in terms of getting both of those to market, what are your plans for both the Duchenne and the antibiotic?
Yeah, they're somewhat different in the same way that the programs have a different profile. If we look forward to if these drugs were both approved, then the sort of organisation that you need to sell a Duchenne product is very, very different from the sort of organisation you need for an antibiotic. And you can think of that just simply in the number of points that you need to influence. So in Duchenne, it's a rare disease, but not only is it a rare disease, it's one where all the patients get funneled in to very few specialist hospitals. So in order to sell a product like isutramid, you need very few salespeople. The investigators are really expert. There's not a high educational issue to get across a new drug. Parents and investigators will be aware of developments. And if you've got good data, setting up a sales organisation is relatively straightforward.
But you would do that yourself, would you?
So we would do that ourselves in the United States and in other parts of the world. We've actually formed a partnership with one of the companies you mentioned earlier, Sarepta, they will market the product in Europe. And in order for those rights, we got a nice upfront payment and we'll share development costs. So they're helping to fund the development of isutramid in exchange. They will sell the product in Europe. We contrast that with the antibiotic. This is something that is an infection that affects people in hospitals, big and small, and in nursing homes. So you need a much larger sales organisation in order to be able to sell a new antibiotic against C. diff. And so while it is possible to set up from scratch a sales organisation to sell something like that, it's more likely that at some point we will seek a marketing partner to do that. Now, whether that's soon in terms of them also helping to fund the phase three, or whether we can get further funding to fund the phase three ourselves and then look for a partnership after that, we'll wait to see.
Right. Glyn, thanks very much for coming in today. It's been so interesting to talk to you. And thank you for listening. To listen to more Boardroom Talk episodes, head to acast.com or subscribe on iTunes.